Mm-hmm. We'll continue looking today at the 15th century, 1500s. Just let me quickly review where we've been. Once again, as we look at every period, we're looking at four factors. Four factors are Yisrael ben Ma'amim, Golos and Geula, Torah as a historical force, as a force in history, and social and economic conditions. And the event that started off, saw at the battle of these 500 years that we're discussing, is the expulsion of the Jews from Spain. And the displacement, dislocation of the Jews who were in Spain to all the way across, all over the Middle East, all over North Africa and the Near East. And at the same time was the displacement of the Ashkenazic Jews from west to east, from France to Germany to Poland, and this growing split between Sephardic Jews and Ashkenazic Jews, and also the entire disruption of communities, disruption of authority, that was a tremendous crisis for the Jewish people in the early 1500s. The Jews were on the move. They were suffering at the hands of the Amim. They had no place. And this is how the 16th century, the 1500s, kind of open up. And it's at this point that we see, maybe more than any other time in history, except arguably, interestingly enough, our own time, that all of these political and economic disruptions become addressed by Torah as a historical force. The force of really a few individuals and the Sfarim that they wrote and the impact that they had, but the impact was not just limited to studying Torah, but the impact was a political impact, a social reorganizing impact. We spoke last week especially about the role of the Shulchan Aruch as a historical force. I mentioned the author of the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, a little bit about him, and the fact that this one work that he wrote was very early, after it was written, widely accepted, and became something which Jews could organize themselves around, that it became a political force. And it was something that was accepted b'chol tefutzos Yisrael. You mentioned the hisnagdus that it had, the opposition that it had, and we'll talk more about it today. But after the initial hisnagdus, the initial opposition, the Shulchan Aruch became very widely spread. It was accepted even in European communities, even in Ashkenazic communities, with the modifications of the Ramah, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, and his modifying the Shulchan Aruch, incorporating Ashkenazic Minhagim and other Shitos Rishonim into the final Shulchan Aruch, so that together the Shulchan Aruch, meaning Mechaber plus Ramah, Yosef Karo's work plus Rav Moshe Isserles' work, became an organizing force, centralizing force. Am Yisrael could address one Sefer. Am Yisrael could practice one standard practice. Am Yisrael, who had difficulty in learning because of the tremendous political and economic pressures, could learn one Sefer and know it all. At least not all, but could know a great deal of what they had to learn, to know, to live halakhically as Jews. And this was accomplished by a Sefer. By the time that these 100 years end, by the time we enter into the 1600s, there's no longer any question about the predominant authority of the Shulchan Aruch. Every Jew at that point in time lives his life by the Shulchan Aruch. Every city is guided by the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch becomes the most authoritative sefer in terms of actual practice that was ever written, at least ever written since the post-Gemara times. No other sefer between the Hasimah Satalmud and the Shulchan Aruch had the, even the Rambam, had the authority in actual fact that the Shulchan Aruch had. Authority, I mean, I'm emphasizing in actual fact. Obviously, Rambam and Rishonim are greater than Achronim, but I'm talking about in terms of actual fact of practice. Second, people didn't, Rambam's idea of how his sefer could work didn't catch on. You don't find the masses studying Rambam. However, you do find the masses, at least you did find the 1600s, the masses studying the Shulchan Aruch. And the Shulchan Aruch then becomes so central that most of the Gedolei Yisrael who we're about to start begin talking about today and next time write their chiburim not on Shas, but they write their chiburim on the Shulchan Aruch. You have Smad, Chavdas Mechokeg, Mechay Shmuel, Mataz, Mechon Avram, and all the Mepharshei HaShulchan Aruch, who are really, as you will see, not only the great Talmidei Chachamim of that time, the 1600s, but who are the leaders of the communities of that time, the Rabbonim of the large cities, the politically most influential Rabbonim, all write their Svarim on the Shulchan Aruch. And the Shulchan Aruch grows from a little Sefer. It'd be interesting to have an early edition, 16th century edition of Shulchan Aruch, like a little pocketbook, with all the Mechaber and Rambo, and was made to be an easy sefer to carry around, versus, right, this is just one volume, probably an 8-volume set, all the literature that's grown around it.
Before never had that acceptance.
Obviously in Psak, it's a very fundamental, but in terms of it being spread, never had the acceptance of the Shulchan Aruch for a lot of reasons. First of all, the Torah is not like a Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is much more concise, much more lemaisa. The Torah goes off, brings other Rishonim, it's kashas, gives terutzim, a different kind of a sefer. I was going to mention that too. Before getting to that, it's a different type of a sefer. What the Torah did, of course, for the Mechaber, is the Torah organized it into four Chaim, Kosh, Mishpat, Nezi, Yerodeya, and the chapter headings, so he did some of the outlining, made it easier, so to speak, for the Mechaber. But in terms of the historical importance, the Shulchan Aruch had an effect in history that the Torah couldn't have had. You learn Torah, and you learn Mechaber, you see the different type of thing. Then, I mentioned this week too, and I can't underemphasize this, and that is the invention of the printing press, which happened around this time. And the beginning of Jews to use the printing press to print Svarim. So that, this can't be underestimated. I mentioned last week, but one has to stress how vital the printing press was in history. I mean, if not for the printing press, Yosef Karo would have written a sefer in Tzfas. A couple of copies would have gotten to Europe. Manuscript copies, Kisvei Yad. It wouldn't have had the same type of dramatic effect. The fact that the date is sometime in the middle 1500s, 1550, when the Shulchan Aruch was printed, roughly, I probably not good at dates, but roughly that time. And so that within a few years, which in those days was a very short time, nowadays a few years is a long time, in those years a few years is a short time, every shul, every city, many individual people owned a copy of the Shulchan Aruch, and most could be studied and have a national influence. Even though the nation was scattered from east to west, north to south. So we mentioned that last time. The other thing I mentioned toward the end, really just a nice, neat way of ending, but I think there's an interesting significance to it too. That is that another example of something which spread like wildfire in the 1500s and caught on, a whole different ballgame than the Shulchan Aruch, is Mechadodi. All right. The song, the poem, Mechadodi, was written by someone who was a contemporary of the Tzaddik, or Shlomo HaTzaddik, and introduced, you know, 1530s, 1540s, and by the 1580s, everybody is saying with Hadodi. Sephardic Ashkenaz, north or south, Europe or Africa, Yemen or Poland. It's a pella. And the only way I can think of explain it in natural terms, in terms of Golos and Geula. Alright, the Torah is an organizing force. And the Shulchan Aruch can be a force to unify Am Yisrael without a government, without a land, without communications. The Shulchan Aruch can do that, and did do it. But there's another force that you can't lose sight of in Jewish history, and that is the force of moving away from Golos toward Geula. In spite of the fact that the 1500s is one of the most difficult periods in Jewish history in terms of Jewish power, we're talking about a powerless people, people with mamash at the mercy of the Goyim, in terms of Yisrael ben Mohammed. But in terms of Golos toward Geula, the 1500s becomes the beginning of a thrust toward Geula. And at the very end of the session last week, I mentioned that Lechad Adi is one example of that. Lechad Adi, of course, is written with Chavit Shabbos, Shabbat Tzachem, Divarechot, etc. But the theme switches, the theme of the poem, Lechad Adi, switches from Shabbos to Geula. Alright? His Na'ari, Mayofar Kumi, his Orari, Chayolim Shisa Shosoyech, Alright, Yaminus Mol Tifrotzi. It's all the theme switches from Mikdash Melech and Shomar Bezachar Divarecha and Mikra Shabbat Lechuvanelcha switches to Geula. Because the Mechaber realized that one other way to unify Am Yisrael and to lift up its hopes and to overcome the terrible disasters that were happening during this time, there was a way to do it. And that way was several ways to do it. One way was the Shulchan Aruch's way of Torah, Halacha, standardized Halacha. And the other way was by lifting people's spirits up. And some people's spirits up, Am Yisrael had a Shabbos, and they thought the Shabbos was Kabbalah Shabbos. So we introduced a poem, which caught on in an amazing way. Everyone adopted it. I mean, imagine nowadays someone would write a poem and want to get all of Am Yisrael to adopt it. I mean, even though you can have instant communication today, it never happened. You know, either from the wrong chassidus, or from the wrong yeshiva, or from the right yeshiva, or the left yeshiva, and it would never go. But then, at that time it did go, and it was universally accepted. Because it was a way of every Shabbat, every Friday night, reminding Jews that there's a geula. There's a geula that one has to look forward to. There's hope. Wake up, rise up, shake off your earth. Spread to the Yominu small, and intertwined with Shabbos. The genius of a poem. It's interesting, in terms of poetry, Kadodi is not, it's lifted from phrases in Tanakh, but the impact of combining Shabbos, which every Jew kept, which Geula, which people were beginning to forget about, is a powerful piece of genius. And it worked. It extended Am Yisrael, began to revive them, re-encourage them, and get them together. At this point, I have to kind of mention another thrust at this time, and that's the thrust of the Kabbalah. Right. In the same time that we're talking about, early 1500s, when the Shulchan Aruch is written, Kadali is written, something else is happening. And that is that a group of people are getting together and getting back to Eretz Yisrael. It's really one of the first significant returns to Eretz Yisrael since the Korban. From the Korban until this time, individual people return to Eretz Yisrael, the Ramban being a very famous example. At the time of the Balei HaTosfos, 300 people went back to Eretz Yisrael to try to settle in Eretz Yisrael. So there's always, even much earlier than this, people who actually try to move back to Eretz Yisrael, but usually the small group, the very weak group. We don't find, up until now, any group coming to Eretz Yisrael and settling there and starting something going. All right, something economic going or something cultural going. Until this time, when a lot of the Jews who were forced out of Spain, or whose parents or grandparents were forced out of Spain, are wandering across the Middle East, find their way to Eretz Yisrael and settle in Eretz Yisrael and settle in Tzfat. And they settle in Tzfat, and they settle there very much into studying Kabbalah. And Kabbalah itself has a very, very powerful historical thrust to it. Right. Now, if you go into the history of Kabbalah, that's not the content of this particular course. But in the 1300s, Sefer was discovered, or written, edited, came to the surface, revealed different theories. That Sefer, of course, the Zohar Kadosh. And from the 1300s on, this Sefer begins to become something that you hear more and more about and begins to be incorporated